still have my sweater on. I still have my sweater on because I told you it is the only unwrinkled garment that I have from the waist up. No, it's true. I hate to say it. I'm also wearing the same pair of jeans. I told you, you know how I am with clothes. You know how I am. I'm not exactly mixing it up here. Martin Zender, once again, I'm not only taking you on the adventure of the two witnesses. I know the lighting is going to change here every second because the bathroom door is open, but strangely enough, this works better. Not only of the two witnesses and of the unveiling, but I'm taking you on this road trip. 8 days across the United States of America with 2 out of 3 of my sons and my daughter-in-law, Mushroom. We're showing her the United States of America. She's never been here before. And she is in awe of it. She loves it. I think her real name is Zhai Jing or something like that. But Mushroom because of the hair. Look at the photo yesterday. She is having so much fun here. And it's a pleasure. We are, did I say where we are? We're in Moab, Utah. I'm in a Motel 6 as I speak to you. And the echo sounds really bad to me. Not sure how it's sounding to you. We're in Moab, and this afternoon we hiked in Arches National Monument. We went to the Delicate Arch. And I'm not just saying this, that I think it's delicate. It's called Delicate Arch. It's the one you see in all the famous photos of arches. It's the perfect arch. No, it's not McDonald's. No, it's not the perfect arch. It's Delicate Arch in Moab National Park. Not Moab National Park, but Arches National Monument. And we hiked out there three-mile round trip to that. That's what's on all the license plates of the folks in Utah. If anyone out there is listening to me in Utah, you know what I'm talking about. Delicate Arch is on your license plate. All right. Tomorrow we're going to be going through Colorado. I don't want you to miss this show. That's why I'm doing this. I'm hanging on, folks. I hope I'm bringing you meat. I always try to do that no matter how tired I am. Yes, it's night again. Yes, I've kicked my son Gabe out again, but that's okay. I want to keep you scripturally fed here, continually fed. I want to produce even while I'm out with my family. I don't take vacation, basically. It's a working type of vacation thing. It's a great experience with my kids. I got to tell you remember in the newsletter I told you I cut my finger back in Fresno. And some guy wrote me about this. I want to show you my finger. It's starting to heal. I'm showing you my finger on the studio cam. It was a big chunk out of there and it bled like crazy. And somebody wrote me and said, Martin, I smashed my finger at work and that thing hurt for days. And it's so... You realize how fragile human beings are because all I did was cut my finger. And it's the fingertip. I was reaching for my razor in my bag. If you want to read about this drama, go to the last issue of the ZWTF. You can get the ZWTF newsletter archives on my website. I reached in my bag looking for my toothbrush. I grabbed my razor instead. Didn't mean to. Ouch. Man, that hurts. And everything I touch, you know, it agitates this. You say, well, Zender, put a Band-Aid on. Well, I do, but they get all frayed and they come off. It's a great evil. Yeah, well, I know. This is my worst problem. What's my problem? But it just tells you how fragile we are because it's all you think about. This guy told me that. He said, Martin, I bump this thing all the time and it just filters my entire day. It just shows you how fragile and how little it takes to mess us up. We think we're flying high and God knows just some little thing to do, some little evil to bring to you to change your day. And it's crazy. One more thing on that ZWTF newsletter of last week, that cop story is true. The police story of the policeman looking at that wanted poster and looking at me and saying, look at this similarity. That is absolutely true story. Just wanted you to know that. As far as this road trip goes, listen, when your son wants you to go on a road trip, when your son writes you 6 months ago and says, hey, Dad, do you want to go on a road trip with my wife and me? Be awesome if you would go with us. You jump at that. My kids, by the grace of God, love me. I love them. And my oldest son, Gabe, came along. It has been an amazing trip. Tomorrow, who knows where I'm going to be talking to you from. It's going to be another night show. I'm not used to these. You've been very patient with me. Don't know where I'm going to be coming from. Now, we have this issue with... I see a parallel with the Exodus. Israel's first Exodus, the famous Exodus, and the Pharaoh. And Israel's deliverance out of that Exodus. This coming trial of Israel, also known as the tribulation, is going to be another exodus. It will be Israel's greatest exodus. Instead of Pharaoh being against them, it's going to be the Antichrist. The reason I can say this with confidence is because the two witnesses performed similar miracles as did Moses. Turned water to blood and basically killed people. The firstborn of every father in Egypt was killed during the Exodus. Those in Israel who had the blood on their doorpost were spared. And so we know that there are many spared in Israel during the tribulation. The 144,000 are spared. The vast throng is spared. And certainly the two witnesses are spared. Look at the similarities here. Elijah, I said that these witnesses come in the spirit and power of Elijah. I do not believe that this is Elijah and this is Moses, because it's important for you to note that Moses and Elijah are dead. They have been dead for a long time now. So it's not Moses and Elijah. Oh, one thing I wanted to add to you concerning what I said about the Transfiguration on the Mount of Transfiguration. Now, Moses and Elijah were there discussing Jesus' exodus from Jerusalem. Now, we often assume that because they were discussing it then, they were discussing it as a future thing. They were discussing how he was about to be exiting Jerusalem via his death. I suggest to you that they are discussing it in the past tense as they are in the kingdom in the future. Because at the time of the transfiguration, it was a vision. I know I'm reviewing a little bit. Moses and Elijah were dead. Now look, Elijah called down fire upon his foes. Great technique if you can work it. We don't work it today. We don't call down fire upon our foes. It's the opposite with us. We call down blessing upon our foes. We bake cookies for our enemies, not so the kingdom. Elijah called down fire upon his foes, reference 2 Kings 1, verses 9 through 12. And of course, this is on Mount Carmel. The prophets of Baal, they were destroyed because they were worshiping a false god. And the two witnesses will also have power to project fire. In Elijah's day, came down from above. In this day, they're going to project it out of their mouths. Sorry if you don't like that, but that's just what it says. I know you like it. I'm just talking to people who are listening to this over your shoulder. Don't listen to that guy. He's a literalist. That's the only way to be, allowing for figures of speech. If you're not a literalist, you're going to miss the whole scripture, because God is a literalist allowing for figures of speech. And in the unveiling, 11:5 is where you will find Revelation 11:5, the two witnesses breathing fire upon their enemies. Besides this, listen to this. The two witnesses lock heaven for 3.5 years from rain, locking the heaven, no rain, and it's exactly the same amount of time Elijah did in Israel. 1 Kings 17:1 is your reference there. 1 Kings 17:1. So the similarity there is definitely striking. There can be no doubt that the witnesses, and I tried to make one witness and say that this is Elijah, one witness is in the spirit of Moses, one's in the spirit of Elijah. I don't think so. Now, I think that they both will have the spirit and power of Elijah and Moses. Moses is very suggestive that this is a second Exodus for Israel. The man of sin, the man of lawlessness, who will oppose the two witnesses, he's going to demand worship. With Elijah's case, he fought Baal. Baal is a false god who demanded worship. Pharaoh, on the other hand, in the days of Moses, demanded political allegiance. There wasn't a religion there necessarily. And again, we're looking at religion and politics with Pharaoh and Baal. And with two witnesses, we're also looking at religion and politics, because the man of lawlessness will demand both religion, both religious fealty and political fealty. Now, I think the two witnesses, and this is just me, I've never heard this anywhere else. I think they're going to be ordinary people. Listen to the first verse of 11:1 in the unveiling. And I will be endowing my two witnesses, and they will be prophesying 1,260 days. I will be endowing them. These are ordinary, average people. And this should be encouraging to you. When anybody thinks of the two witnesses, they automatically think of these spiritual giants, that these people are like, oh my God, nobody can attain to this. These people must have lived their entire lives as monsters of faith. They must be spiritual giants. They must pray every day. They must read their Bibles 5 times a year. They must fast. They must pray. Doesn't say anything like that. Now, I'm going to run this by you, see what you think. Judas, I think, was one of the most ordinary people around, even less than ordinary. He was not very good with the money when he served as the purse keeper for that ragtag fugitive fleet led by Jesus Christ. And yet Satan inhabited him, and he became extraordinary at that point. Ordinary man becomes extraordinary because he was, bad word to use, but listen, he was endowed. I'm using the same word found in 11:1. He was endowed by Satan. I'm just drawing the analogy, but I don't want to stay with that word. He wasn't endowed, he was inhabited. He was taken over by Satan, but the two witnesses are endowed. So I'm drawing a parallel for you now between the two witnesses and Judas. I know this is very unlikely. I've worked this out on my own. Judas, ordinary guy. Satan comes, boom, numero uno bad guy now. And he, I know this lighting's driving you crazy. I keep going back and forth. And he betrays Christ. Likewise, I contend to you that these two witnesses are not Moses and Elijah, because Moses and Elijah are famous now. That would ruin everything. It would ruin everything. Back in the day, yes, they were nobodies. They were country bumpkins, Moses and Elijah. They were ordinary nobodies. I can dig that. But if you make it Moses and Elijah now, people will tend to think that these are these great individuals. But I contend to you that these are ordinary individuals. These are individuals that were doing none of the things I just mentioned. Praying, reading their Bibles. They're coming out of nowhere and they're endowed. They're endowed. Just like the Apostle Paul. Here's another example for you. This is God's modus operandi. He takes a guy that's worse than normal. He's absolutely abnormal, going out to kill people. And God endows him with power. He gives him. He blesses him. He makes him an instrument in his hand. Likewise, you and me. What do we read in 1 Corinthians? Unwise, weak, ignoble, and stupid. So to make these two witnesses epic Bible heroes, it's a vast mistake. It's not in keeping with the tone of the unveiling. It's not in keeping with God's modus operandi. God is always taking the unknown, the uncelebrated, the uneducated, Peter, James, and John, uneducated, and he's endowing them with power. In the upper room at Pentecost were not sitting famous men. They're famous now, but those 12 disciples were the offscouring of the community, and flames of fire descended upon them, and they became supernaturally great because of the endowment of God. The two witnesses are Joe and Al. The two witnesses are two guys that were playing poker the day before, but now they're endowed with God's power. This is in accord with the operation of God. It's how he always does things. And use this for yourself. Use this pattern to tell yourself that it's not by might nor by power, but by God's Spirit. And I don't care if it's the circumcision evangel or that of the uncircumcision. It's God's Spirit that causes you to be what you are, to do what you do. I know it does me. Whether circumcision or uncircumcision, whether the administration of the grace of God, or the unveiling of Jesus Christ. It's God's power in us that super exceeds anything we are or can do.